I was born with the devil in me. I could not help the fact that I was a murderer. No more than the poet can help the inspiration to sing. I was born with the evil one standing as my sponsor beside the bed where I was ushered into the world, and he has been with me since.
Back for yet another episode of the 13 o'clock podcast, episode 64. As a matter of fact, it's 64, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep. H.H. Holmes. This is going to be a good one.
And this was actually a request, and I apologize that I don't remember who requested it. I did have it on my list like for much later, but since someone asked for it a while back, I was like, well, let's get around to it.
Yeah.
And I feel like, because we did paranormal last time, and I'm trying to get into the kind of thing where we're kind of doing like paranormal, true crime, right. That kind of thing. I mean, you know.
And then we can go back to a haunting series.
Yeah, and yeah. Stuff like that.
We'll talk about that. Yeah. But, you know, this is going to be a good show. I've always liked this case. This is kind of like America's first big-time serial killer case. I've always kind of had my doubts about it, but Jenny's dug up some really good stuff. We're going to discuss it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge, huge case, and it's kind of like, I almost want to compare it to like the show. Remember the show we did about Elizabeth Bathory?
Yeah.
Where she was probably a piece of shit person who killed people, but a lot of the stuff, like the legends and stuff that came out after, were probably not true or were wildly exaggerated. And I think that the same thing happened in the case of H.H. Holmes.
Yeah, but we're going to get to that. For those
He wasn't a piece of shit, because he was. He was a horrible person.
Yeah, and he killed people.
And he did kill people.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know who H.H. Holmes is, just off the top, this is the guy who built basically the murder castle.
The murder castle.
Right, right outside the World's Fair.
In Chicago, yeah.
Back in Chicago.
Late 1800s. Late 19th century. Around the same time as Jack the Ripper. They were rough contemporaries.
And one of the unusual things about H.H. Holmes is that he was a doctor. He actually graduated medical school, which is very unusual for a serial killer.
Yeah.
And there were just always, whenever I'd hear the stories about this guy, there was always some shit about it that didn't really jive with what I know about serial killers based on my studies reading the FBI profiler manuals.
Yeah.
Because I read the books on that.
Yeah.
You know? Actually, I read a book by a guy who wrote that book.
Yeah.
And serial killers have certain traits.
Yeah.
And I never really could imagine this guy having the traits as specified.
He had a different motivation,
right.
I think.
Normally, a serial killer basically is a serial rapist. He just happens to rape and torture or kill the victim.
Yeah.
And there's always something missing from this case. He never really struck me as a serial rapist.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that second.
Yeah, we will. Before we do that, we just have a couple of shout-outs. First thing, I would really like to give a shout-out to our latest Patreon supporter named John. Yeah. Thank you very much. He's one of our YouTube listeners. And he also had a couple of really cool suggestions for topics. So I have put those on the list, and we will get to those sooner or later. But they are on there, I promise. So, you know, thank you very much for your support.
We did a really good, cool Road Warrior review. You guys ought to check that one out.
Yeah, that was our last movie review, and I only just posted it Sunday, so because I kind of got behind. So,
speaking of reviews, I was going online, just looking through old stuff of ours on Google and everything. Somebody reviewed one of our shows. It's the weirdest review ever.
It was the show we did. I can't remember the episode number. It was somewhere in the 40s. It was the one we did about Bella and the Witch Elm and the Pitchfork Murder, the witchcraft murder. And
This guy was somehow related to...
Yeah, he was like related to... I think he was related to Joseph Jacobs, who was one of the people that was questioned in the Bella and the Witch Elm thing, or was supposed to be a Nazi spy or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember all the details exactly. But this person has like a blog where they talk all about the Bella and the Witch Elm case.
Yeah.
And evidently they came across our episode about it and were kind of like...
He didn't like it.
Yeah. Well, like I said...
He didn't really seem to get the show. He goes, boy, they sure do talk a lot.
Well,
this is a fucking talk show.
You know what would be funny? Okay, I'm going to pull a John Cage, you guys, and I'm going to upload a video that's just an hour of silence.
Yeah. You know, they plug. You know, they're plugging products. They're plugging books. My God. Jeez.
We suck, for real.
People are funny, man.
Well, funny in a sad, pitiful sort of way.
Okay.
But yeah, so, also, if any of you guys would like to support the show, like John has, then you can go to our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. Or if you'd like to give a one-time donation, you can do that too and go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's a little link in the sidebar that says PayPal con donation, donate to PayPal or whatever the fuck it says. I don't know.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff. And also, like I said, my book, The Faceless Villain, is out in print and ebook. Still working on the audiobook. I swear to God, I'm working on the audiobook. It's just, it's just that I get so much other work that I have to do because I do this show, I do freelance graphic design, I don't know if you guys know that, and all this other stuff. So that stuff usually has priority, like, because the show has to come out every week and the movie review has to come out every week. And, you know, the graphic design has to get done, you know, quickly.
Right. It's so funny because we first conceived this show as a way of actually finding people to give out free samples of Jenny's books so we could get reviews.
Yeah.
But on the books, because it helps launch a book. But what's funny is I'm reading like some of the reviews on Amazon and we're finding people who buy the book, and by buying the book, they discover the podcast.
Yeah.
And they discover the YouTube show. You know, I think that's like,
it's all awesome. a huge feedback loop.
Yeah, it's a big feedback loop.
Yeah.
It's like a part of the Krussel sphere somehow.
Right. We're
all part of the Krussel sphere. That's what it is.
It's beautiful, like a, is what it is.
You need a picture of Krussel with like... Like a halo, come on, with his eye patch on. No. Fuck that. We're gonna have like Krussel from The Hateful Eight when he's older.
When he's older, with that looking.
Yeah, and that handlebar mustache. Yeah.
That mustache was pretty epic, I have to say.
All right. So these people there, and let's go ahead and give them this case. Well, so they have something to do while they're on their commute to work, or, you know, they're probably half of them are in bed getting ready, trying to go to sleep. Tom and Jenny gonna put them to sleep with this story.
That didn't sound good.
It didn't sound good. It's all fun and games.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, H.H. Holmes. Let's get to this. This is a weird case.
All right. So the thing about H.H. Holmes, and like I said, okay, we do like a lot of research on this show. Like I said, I'm not a super stickler and everything like that. I have read Devil in the White City, which is the kind of the most famous book about him, which is sort of nonfiction, but he added some stuff in there, but he said where he added it.
Right.
I have read the book Depraved by Harold Schechter, which is also about him. And but the latest book to come out about H.H. Holmes actually only came out in April of 2017.
Yeah, this is a pretty cool guy who wrote this.
And it was, it's by Adam Seltzer. And I admit that I have not read it yet, although I've read a bunch of his blog posts and I watched some of his lectures that he gave at libraries and stuff like that.
Maybe one day we'll have him on as a guest so he can plug his
book.
That'd
be cool because he seems like a cool guy.
Cool guest,
he's a historian and he's kind of, he writes about other things too, but he got super fascinated with the H.H. Holmes case. And he discovered that a lot of the stuff, and I think that this has kind of been going around for a while in these circles, but a lot of the stuff that people know of about H.H. Holmes is actually not really true or is wildly exaggerated.
Yeah, now you're going to piss off a lot of these serial killer fanboys.
I'm not, well, no, I mean, like I said, I'm not saying he was a killer. He did kill multiple people.
Right.
And he was a horrible piece of shit.
Right.
But a lot of the stuff, I mean, you know, I've seen some stuff that said he killed like 200 people. There's no way. He did not do that.
I don't think he had time.
I don't think he did that.
Right.
It's like I said, it's kind of like he killed a lot of people, but not that many. And a lot of the stuff, too, that came that was about like the murder castle, also probably not true.
Yeah. We get into problems with these stories because when you track them down, where these stories come from, they come from old defunct newspapers. And this came from a time when America was basically did nothing but yellow journalism. Which
well, they were just trying to sell
what
papers.
Maybe what we have now.
Well, that's what I mean. It's not really that much different.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just trying to sell papers, and sensationalism then as now sells papers.
Right.
So if they have to exaggerate things, even if they have to make things up, if it has like a kernel of truth, and then they just like make all this crazy shit up, then they're gonna do it because particularly back then, even like one city would have like a lot of competing newspapers,
right?
And you had to kind of get your shit. It's kind of like the internet now where it's like, we'll just publish anything because right. we want to be the first one to get it up
there. Trying to get those hits.
Right. And yeah. stuff like that. So it was the same thing back then, but with newspapers. And there were right. several more like competing for attention. Right. So they're going to print the most salacious, crazy shit that they can
yeah, get away with. Yeah. And I don't think there were liable laws in the way that we know them now.
Not so much. I mean,
probably difficult to sue a newspaper for lying.
Yeah.
Back then.
I mean, I think people did, but, you know, it yeah. was probably kind of like...
You didn't get much of a... Didn't get much out of it.
Maybe probably. Not.
The settlements were probably pretty small.
But, yeah. So, okay. Basically, H.H. Holmes obviously was not his real name. He was actually born Herman Webster Mudgett. Henry Holmes is the name he's best known by, Dr. Henry Howard Holmes, to be more specific. He also had a shit ton of other aliases, which are yeah. much less famous. Because first and foremost, although technically he is a serial killer, he was actually a con man, first and foremost.
Yeah.
It seems that, I mean, his big thing was he was a fucking pathological liar.
Yeah.
He just really, I don't know what it was about him. I mean, like you said, he actually did finish medical school. He yeah. was a doctor. Like, yeah. it wasn't just a kind of thing where he was, like, saying he was a doctor or faker. He actually did finish medical school.
And that's the weird thing. Most serial killers, the kind of pathology that they have, they can't delay gratification.
Right.
They tend to be smart enough to get educations, but they don't want to wait and go through the work.
Right. They don't have, yeah.
This guy actually went through medical school, you know, dealt with cadavers and, you know, he actually did his shit. But for some strange reason, instead of trying to make a living as a doctor, which he could have easily done, he was trying to live as a con man.
Yeah.
Weird.
Well, trying, he did.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
For a long time. Yeah. He did it for a long time before it was
just,
he got caught.
I guess it was just easier. It was just easier to be a
maybe,
con man.
Or maybe it was just easier for his personality type. Yeah. Who knows? He seems like a really weird dude.
Yeah.
I mean, he just seems like a really weird dude. Now, he was born actually in 1861. Now, his parents were kind of strict Methodists and stuff like that. Some later stuff about him came out that said, oh, you know, his father was abusive, or that Henry Holmes... you know, abused animals when he was a kid and stuff like that, you know, so to try and fit him into the serial killer, the normal range of serial killer behavior.
Right.
Now, it should be that there is no contemporary evidence to support this. No, his father could have been abusive for all I know, but right. But there is no...
Not enough evidence.
There's no evidence to support yeah. that. And there's also no evidence to support that he, you know, cut up animals or anything like right. that. Now, he did, though... Okay, now this is a story that he tells, so I don't know if how... accurate, is because he made up a
this
lot
guy
of shit
lie
too.
Like crazy.
He was very self-aggrandizing. Yeah. I'll say that much.
He would claim to have killed people that were never killed. They turned up
that
alive.
That weren't dead. So, yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later. We'll get to that a little bit later. Because I, for some reason, I know it's like twisted, but I kind of find that sort of funny.
Yeah.
But he says that his whole love of medicine and anatomy and stuff like that, which he did seem to have, stemmed from when he was a child. I don't know how old he was, maybe 9 or 10. And he said that he was terrified of skeletons. Now, when he was a kid, he claims, because he was smarter than the other kids,
yeah, they were
evidently,
hitting on him. Yeah.
That they picked on him because they yeah. were jealous. They were haters.
Yeah.
So...
There could be some truth to that.
There could be some, yeah.
Right.
But like I said, it's coming from him, so, you know, right. take that with a grain of salt. Now, he says that the kids used to pick on him and stuff, and that one day, like, three older kids kind of tackled him and dragged him into this doctor's office... And, like, showed him the skeleton. And he was talking about he was terrified of the skeleton. It looked like it was going to come out and get him and all this other kind of stuff. But he said this particular incident was very formative because he's like, after I had confronted that fear of death and the skeleton and everything like that, I almost found that it, like, flipped around and it became, like, a fascination, right?
Yeah.
So then after that, he decided he wanted to go to medical school and stuff like that. Now, he... I think he left school at 16 and started medical school, and obviously it didn't take as long back then.
Yeah, I'd like to add that I don't really buy his story.
No, I don't either.
I think he's trying to... It's
very convenient.
It's just a very convenient way of explaining, you know, why he stole people's skeletons, you know, which he did do that.
Yeah. So he went to medical school. He actually started... He did some teaching and stuff like that. He actually married quite young, his first wife.
Yeah.
He had many at the same time. And her name was Clara Lovering. And they had a son, actually, named Robert. And the funny thing about the about Robert, he became a CPA later. And many years later, he became, when he was grown, he became the city manager of Orlando, Florida, where we live.
Wow.
So, ooh, H.H. Holmes connection in Orlando.
Yeah, H.H. Holmes entering the Crustal Sphere.
Let's see.
There you go.
It's all coming together.
It all comes together. It all Crustal comes together. Crustal as the
nexus. Yeah. Okay, so while he was in medical school, like I said, he had this, you know, fascination with skeletons and anatomy and cadavers, and he really was into, like, dissection and all this other kind of shit. Now, medical school of the time, it's not like now where it's like, you know, ooh, you're a doctor and everything like that. Back then, I think doctors were kind of looked at a bit askance because in medical school, you know, you needed cadavers to work on.
Yeah.
You don't want some doctor cutting on you that's never cut on a body before, yeah. You know. But there weren't enough cadavers to go around.
No.
So the medical students were kind of grave encouraged, robbers. Yeah. Yeah, to kind of bring in their own cadavers. Like, you know, BYOC.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, they were grave robbers.
They didn't, like, really ask where, if you showed up with a cadaver for class, no one's going to ask where that shit came from.
Right.
So there was a lot of grave robbing going on to get cadavers. And Holmes seemed to take this, he kind of used this to his advantage, because one thing he would do, well, okay, there, he had kind of two scams running, and this kind of this was from when he was probably 18, 19, 20 years old.
Yeah.
He started doing this kind of shit. He would get cadavers and he would, like, fuck them all up.
Yeah.
And then he would use them for insurance fraud.
Yeah, he claimed them. He'd open up an insurance policy on somebody that he knew.
Yeah.
And then make that body look like that person.
Or then, mess them, like, burn their face or something
then,
like that.
And then claim that person had died. And then they would split the money.
Yeah, and then they would cash in on the shit.
That was the normal MO.
He had a lot of those scams.
And it was called scamming.
Yeah.
They actually called that scamming. I think that's where that word came from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, he had that, and he also had a side gig where... And this kind of came along later, too. Even some of the people that he allegedly killed, you know, like I said, they don't really know how many. But after he would kill them, sometimes in insurance scams, then he would to get all the flesh off their bones and he would sell the skeletons to medical schools. Because, they were in high demand. So some of them, $175, $200, which was a lot of money back then. This was, 1890s.
Yeah, probably talking about $3,000.
Right. It's quite a lot. You know, I don't know. I don't know if you can look it up. But, it was a lot of money. So he had that kind of shit going. Now, the thing about it, though, is that it seems that all of his kind of insurance scams and stuff like that, I'm sure he probably made some money now and then. But from looking at, like, I was kind of listening to Adam Seltzer's talk and everything, listening. I don't know how much the insurance companies fell for it.
Right.
Because the thing about him is that when he was younger, he moved around a lot.
Yeah.
He used a fuck ton of different aliases,
right,
different company names, different, you know, he changed his name a bunch of times and he would move from city to city. And it does seem, and there are actually a lot of lawsuits on record where he would try to cash out a policy, you know, with a cadaver or something like that. And the insurance company would sue him.
Right.
Rather than pay out.
Right.
So it doesn't appear that he was, like, the best con man ever, because it does seem like that, you know, there was a lot of suspicion. He got caught a lot. Like, he wasn't jailed for it or anything, because usually he would take off and everything like that. But
so he would basically just kind of skim off the top of his successes and then just run from his failures. So he was, you know, he never paid any fines, but in some scams that did work, he would collect from that. Which is weird, because he probably could have just made a better living had he just played a straight doctor.
You would think that.
And stayed,
like,
in one spot.
I don't know if there was, like, some other problem that he couldn't do that or
another
what.
Another scam that he had going is that he would sell this, like, special medicinal tonic water with his own label on it and everything. And it came right out of the city's tap.
Yeah.
So he'd just sell you a bottle of water.
They still do that shit now, though.
Probably.
They do.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know.
Well, I don't know.
They do that kind of shit.
I don't know anything about it. I have to ask Crustal.
Crustal knows all.
Yeah, he knows.
Yeah. And another thing too that he would do is that he bought a lot of things on credit.
Yeah.
And never wouldn't pay for them. Yeah, he did that a lot too. So, like I said, con man first and foremost, but still a piece of shit. Now, his first wife, evidently he beat on her.
Yeah.
She ended up, they never divorced, but she ended up taking off.
Mm-hmm.
So then he ended up marrying someone else, and I think her name was Murda Belknap. But technically, he was still married to Clara, his first wife. Now, at one point, he ended up being married to at least three women, maybe four.
Yeah.
The last one, I think, was Minnie Williams, and they're not entirely sure if they were married or not. They acted as though they were. But so he also a bigamist because he never bothered divorcing any of the other ones.
And he had all these mistresses.
Yeah, and he had a fuck ton of mistresses.
See, here's the thing that makes me question whether or not this guy is an actual traditional serial killer. What makes me question it is that H.H. Holmes was actually, by all accounts, popular with women.
He was. He had no problem.
He was evidently good looking. They said he had a kind of a slight build, but he came off as being kind of stylish and elegant.
Yeah. And, very intelligent, very well-spoken.
Very intelligent, well-spoken, super well-dressed, and he had no problem with women. They were falling all over him, which that is not a typical serial killer trait.
Yeah. He seemed more a Ted Bundy type. Yeah. In the way that he seemed super charming, sociopathic type of.
Bundy was a confirmed rapist, though.
Oh, yeah.
And this guy evidently was not.
Not that I ever read.
He never claimed to have raped anybody, and no one has ever claimed to have been raped by him.
Yeah, I don't really see. I mean, you know, I haven't read everything about him. Because H.H. Holmes, I have to say, if you start, like, looking into the guy, there's, like, a huge fucking rabbit hole that you can go down into. There's just shit all over the place.
Now, the FBI is going to say that what makes a man a serial killer is that the motive is sexual.
Yeah.
They are serial rapists. All right. And this guy does not seem to have had a sexual motive.
I don't think so. No, it doesn't seem like
Which, technically, by the FBI's standards, the FBI would probably not consider him to be that type of a serial killer.
He's a multiple murderer.
More like a mass murderer or multiple murderer.
Yeah, multiple murderer is probably the distinction.
Right.
Now, the first inkling maybe that he was a killer didn't really come about until around 1884, 1885. And there were just rumors that he had been seen with a little boy and that little boy later disappeared and stuff like that. But I'm not real sure how, there wasn't a lot of information on that. And that could have been his kid because he did have a kid that was around that age at the time. So it might have been his son. And his son lived. He didn't kill his son. And the weird thing too is that he didn't kill any of his wives either.
No.
Some of his mistresses, they think that he probably killed them.
Well, one of them he locked into a safe. Wasn't that a mistress?
I believe it was, yeah.
Yeah. And he never really said why, at least far. We haven't read his confession, but the pieces.
I've read pieces of it, yeah.
He doesn't give a reason.
Yeah.
Did he ever give a reason why he locked her in the safe and suffocated her?
I don't think he did.
I think he just wanted her skeleton to sell.
Maybe,
yeah. It's weird how he had all that stuff, but he was so hard up for money.
Yeah,
he didn't have to pay for it. He stole most of it anyway.
Yeah, all of it's pretty much stolen.
Weird.
All of it's and the weird thing, too, like I said, he had a bunch of wives. He also had a couple kids. Like I said, Robert was the first son. And then with one of his other wives, with Murda, who was his second wife, he also had a daughter named Lucy.
Right.
And as far as I know, he didn't kill them. He didn't seem to have had
a drug or a gambling habit. And even in those days, drugs were cheap. You could get cocaine for nothing.
Yeah, well, it wasn't illegal.
It wasn't illegal, and it wasn't worth anything, so you didn't need money for drugs. Well, it's unclear what he needs this money for, because he wasn't using it to pay the building, per se.
Maybe he just wanted it. He just wanted it.
And where did the money actually go?
Like a dragon.
Go? Yeah.
Who knows? But yeah, so he ended up, his third wife was actually named Georgiana Yoke, and he actually married her in Colorado. Well, he was still married to the other two women. Now, probably the most famous shit about H.H. Holmes started in about 1886, and this is when he turned up famously in Chicago. There's a lot of legends about this too. The legend says, and there's a documentary on Netflix called H.H. Holmes, America's First Serial Killer.
Yeah, we saw it.
And it's a good documentary, like it's creepy and spooky and everything like that, but they repeat a lot of the stuff that's been debunked.
Okay.
I guess to kind of make it creepier and stuff like that. So, yeah, most of the documentaries I've seen about H.H. Holmes are entertaining, but they're inaccurate.
It's legend.
Yeah. It's kind of like, well, Adam Seltzer, he calls it an American tall tale. It's like, you know, here's this guy, and he technically is a multiple murderer. He's a con man. He's a horrible person. But then all these layers kind of got added on later on. So the story goes that H.H. Holmes arrived in Chicago, and he started working at a pharmacy that was owned by Elizabeth Holton, who I believe was the doctor, because they always say Dr. Holton and you assume it's a man, but I think the doctor was actually the woman.
Okay.
And the husband was he worked in construction or something like that. But they owned a pharmacy and he went to work for them. And the legend goes that he killed them.
Right.
Like he was like the owner of the place was like an old man and he had this much younger wife, which is also not the case. They were actually both about the same age as him. They were younger.
Right.
And he did work for them. He did buy the pharmacy.
Right.
He didn't kill them.
No, they were alive at the time of his trial.
Yeah, and actually, I've seen pictures of their graves, and they lived a totally normal life.
Right.
He just, he bought it off them, and they just were like,
now, I don't remember. Did he claim to have killed them, didn't he? Isn't that where the story came from?
See, I think that's where the story came from.
Yeah, because he was running around after his arrest and claiming to have killed all kinds of people.
Much of the legend that stemmed from, it wasn't just newspapers making shit up. He made a lot of things up.
Yeah.
You know, that were published in papers. And, you know, the newspapers might have kind of finagled some of the shit, too. But when he wrote some of his confessions, which were very contradictory, like sometimes he said, I didn't do anything. Sometimes this death was an accident, blah, blah, blah. But then, like, after he got arrested and, you know, convicted and everything like that, he said he pretty much killed fucking everybody. Like, he just, like, confessed to all kinds of murders.
Right.
So, yeah, I think he did claim, because he also claimed that he had killed one of the other students in medical school and sold his skeleton, but that dude was still alive too.
Yeah, and it's funny because right before they were getting ready to hang him on the gallows, he recants everything. I made it all up.
Yeah. Please don't hang me. They're like, fuck you.
Yeah, which is true. I think he made a lot of that shit up.
I think he did. So like I said, the legend goes, and even the documentary that's on Netflix, as good as it is, as entertaining as it is, claims that he killed the people whose pharmacy he bought, and that is not the case. They did not die. They lived a normal life. It was fine. Okay, so we're at the halfway point now, so I will get into the whole murder castle angle.
Yeah, this is my favorite part of it.
Yeah, this is the most famous part of it.
It's like straight out of like Phantom of the Opera.
Or like an Edgar Allan Poe story or something.
Phantom has a lair with the whole torture facilities.
I want a lair. God damn.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. The Phantom of the Opera had a damn, in the book, the book is awesome. I almost thought it was a documentary reading the book. Okay. The Phantom had like this octagonal room lined with mirrors. And in the middle of it, a big like razor sharp crystalline, looked like a tree that slowly rotated. And he had central heating that would pump heat into it. And he would trap people in there and they would start to hallucinate from the heat thinking that they were dying in the desert. And if they tried to climb the tree, it would cut them all up. It was weird, man.
That is pretty crazy.
Gaston Leroux.
Yeah.
He wrote it. Yeah. I thought it was a documentary.
Aw. Yeah. Unfortunately, no.
He had an underground lair on an island in the middle of an underground lake. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty awesome. Yeah. We need to like get into that. Let's get one.
Yeah,
they
had a tunnel that led to the theater. That's some pretty badass shit.
That is badass.
Yeah. You had to get into a boat and row out. Yeah, to the island. An underground island in a cave.
Like
pretty
crossing
cool.
Crossing the river Styx. Okay, so we're going to take a break right now and we will come back and talk about the murder castle.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena by Jenny Ashford, author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to the Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Hand Book on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
The Villisca Axe Murders, Hinterkaifeck Farm, The Axe Man of New Orleans, The Cleveland Torso, Who Put Bella in the Witch Hour, The Solder Children, The Phantom Killer, The Black Dahlia, Summerton. What is it about these unsolved murders that still fascinates us long after the cases have gone cold? Is it simply that we enjoy being able to come up with our own theories about what happened to the unfortunate victims? Or are we intrigued by the terrifying possibility that the killers are still out there somewhere? Take a grisly journey through the blood-soaked avenues of early 20th century crime in the new book, The Faceless Villain, Volume 1, by Jenny Ashford, now available on Amazon.
All right, we're back. Now, this is the most famous part of the H.H. Holmes legend.
Yeah, it's the best part.
The murder castle.
Yeah.
Okay, so he buys a lot across from the pharmacy where he was working, and he starts construction on credit of initially what was a two-story building. Now, the first story was actually retail space. There was like a restaurant, there was a jewelry store, there was a pharmacy, there was a couple of other things. And then the second floor was kind of partitioned off into apartments. It was actually not intended as a hotel. That is specious. That's not true. So actually, he did have like residents like living up in this up in some of these.
Imagine
apartments.
Imagine if H.H. Holmes was your landlord,
right? Wouldn't that be creepy? And also, the third floor was actually not built until later, when he heard that the World's Fair, the Columbian Exposition, was coming to Chicago, and he was intending to build a third floor and turning it into a hotel for all the tourists coming, but the third floor was never really finished.
Yeah.
Now, here's the funny thing.
Hold on one second.
What?
If you guys haven't seen this World Fair that they had, how long did that go for?
It was from May to October.
Man, that thing was fantastic.
It really was awesome.
It looked like something from the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
Huge statues of like horses. It went all around a lake, and it just looked like
people came,
whole city.
People came from all over the world to see that.
Yeah, and it's funny, when it was over, they just tore it down.
Yeah.
Because it was evidently made out of shit anyway. It was just all plaster.
Yeah, it was just all plaster. It looked awesome. Yeah, it was just made with kind of cheap material.
Yeah, and they said it fell apart. It started to fall apart quickly, so they just tore it down.
It was just meant to be temporary.
Man, it was awesome, though.
And, you know, also meant to be temporary, like I said, was the third floor of Holmes's murder castle.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a funny thing. So Holmes wanted, like, a vault in his building.
Yeah.
So what he did was he bought the vault on credit.
Yeah.
They came in and they put the vault in the middle of the building, and then he had the building built around it.
Yeah.
And then he didn't pay.
Right.
So the people that put the vault in there said, well, we're going to repossess it. And he's like, come get it, bitches.
Yeah.
There's this whole building around it. He's like, and if you fuck up my building, I'll sue you.
Yeah.
So they couldn't get it.
This is back before they had credit scores.
Yeah.
You could screw over somebody and then screw over somebody else and then somebody else. And there was no way to know whether or not you paid your bill or not.
Right.
In the good old days.
When you could get away with a crime.
Back when you could get away with
just
stuff.
Just by moving to the next town and changing your name.
Yeah.
But you can't do that shit anymore.
No.
But so also in preparation for the World's Fair, he had this kind of the third floor built kind of cheaply. And he bought like all this snazzy new furniture and dishes and all this other kind of stuff, also on credit. And what he would do, and I think this kind of contributed some to the legend later on about all these secret passages and secret rooms and stuff like that. Mm. What he would do is all this furniture, when he heard that the creditors were coming to take it back, he had all these little secret rooms. Like he would have a room and then he would like wallpaper over the door so you didn't know it was there.
Yeah.
He would hide the furniture and the shit that he bought in there.
Right.
So when the creditors came, he's like, what furniture? I didn't buy any furniture from you guys.
Right.
What are you talking about?
So they couldn't
repossess it because he said he didn't have it and they didn't find it. So that was what some of the secret passages were for, was hiding stuff that he had stolen so they couldn't take it back. Later on, the legend grew about the murder castle that it had. Let's see if we can catalog like all the things it was supposed to have. It did have a vault. That is true. They said that there was like a torture chamber type of thing, like in the basement. They said there was like a crematorium in the basement. They also said that there was like a greased chute that he would use to like do bodies down the thing. And, you know, various other things like that, like sealed rooms with like little gas valves and that kind of thing where he would like seal people in rooms and like suffocate
them.
Yeah. I think most of that is exaggerated.
All right,
there actually was a furnace in the basement. He said that he used it for glass bending because he did actually try to start like a glass bending business, not only in that building, but in another one that he sort of owned.
Now, what would like, they do the for glass bending? What are they making, bottles?
I guess so, yeah.
Beakers?
Bottles are just, just glassware in general, I guess.
Right.
So I don't know. So there's really no evidence if the one that's in the murder castle was actually used to burn bodies. I imagine it might have been.
Right.
You know, like I said, he had other ones and he did have kind of like plausible deniability about this is what I put it in there for. Right. There wasn't really a torture chamber, not as such. I think there were some kind of things that implied that he may have, because I do think that some of the people that he killed, that he probably sold their skeletons.
Right.
There was another guy later that came out and said that he had purchased cadavers from H.H. Holmes and that he skeletonized them and sold them to medical schools.
Now, just to be clear, where are your sources coming from that this stuff was exaggerated?
This is kind of all over the place. I'm sort of going from, like I said, Adam Seltzer's newest book, where he kind of dug into a lot of the old records that people hadn't really seen for a while. So he's kind of going back into like legal records, and he's not saying that some of the stuff didn't happen. He's just saying that some of it might have been exaggerated.
Okay.
Because he's like, he traced a lot of the, you know, torture chamber type stories and stuff about the murder castle. He's like, that actually, those stories came along later.
Okay.
They were fictionalized accounts that were put like in 40s pulp magazines and things like that. So a lot of the details about that kind of stuff was from that. It wasn't actually from the time.
Well, yeah. So when you go back to the time, in other words, you know, the source material of the period, that stuff's not mentioned.
Some of it is, but not... Like the worst offender probably at the time was a tabloid called the New York World. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of the first ones to publish a blueprint of the murder castle that like labeled the rooms as like
gas chamber
and all this other kind of stuff. Yeah, that's when
they kept showing in that documentary.
Yeah. Okay. So like I said, some of that was like supposition. Now.
So it wasn't based on any real blueprint. It was just something that they drew up back at the office. Of what they thought that third floor looked like.
Yeah, and like I said, some of it might have had some truth behind it. This is why it's like so hard to get to the bottom of his case, because there was so much exaggeration in the press. There was exaggeration later on, like in fictionalized accounts. He exaggerated.
Yeah, he lied.
A lot of different things. The one person that they are positive that he killed, and this was the one he was convicted for, was Benjamin Peitzel.
All right.
Benjamin Peitzel, he met him, he was like a carpenter, so he either came to work on his castle or they met each other on another job. Sources kind of differ on that. But Benjamin Peitzel was kind of his right-hand man. He was kind of a big, hulking kind of guy, so he was kind of like, I don't know, he was kind of like his...
He was his muscle.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
That kind of thing. So Benjamin Peitzel probably knew about a lot of H.H. Holmes insurance scams, because he was running those the whole time.
Right.
So one of the biggest ones that he was going to do, and I don't think they mentioned this in the documentary, but actually H.H. Holmes was actually going to, at first, he was going to fake his own death and, you know, cash in on insurance that way. But when he tried to do that, the insurance company was like, nah.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So then he asks Benjamin Peitzel, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to fake your death.
Mm-hmm.
And then because Benjamin Peitzel had a wife and he had five kids, they had five kids. You know, he's like, you'll make all this money. We'll put your wife as the beneficiary and then we'll all split it. So what ended up, I should mention too, that another insurance scam that he ran, he burned down the third floor of his hotel at least twice.
Okay.
And there are records of, and he had insurance policies with several insurance companies. Although about, I think in 1 year, I think like nine of them sued him.
Okay.
Rather than pay out. So like I said, he wasn't great at this, but he kept trying. Yeah,
this guy's not a mastermind.
He kept trying.
Yeah, he figured numbers.
Yeah.
You know, just do it in numbers and it'll go your way.
Yeah, eventually it'll come out. Okay, right. So he sets up this scheme with Benjamin Peitzel. Now, I'm not sure if even from the beginning he planned on really killing Benjamin Peitzel.
Right.
But that's what happened.
Right.
So, I mean, these two had been like friends, I guess, sort of, for a while.
In his confessions, he said that he was done with him, from what I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
But he may have lied.
Right.
It may have been by accident.
So what he did, they actually went to Philadelphia to pull this off, because it's where the insurance company was based. And they installed Benjamin Peitzel in an apartment. And he actually lived there for a little while under a pseudonym, B.F. Perry. And he's like, okay, we're going to find a cadaver that looks like you, and we're going to make it look like you died in an accident, like in a lab explosion.
Right.
But what he actually ended up doing was, they don't know if he poisoned him with chloroform or made him drink chloroform or something, and then he set the body on fire. He wanted it to look like an explosion.
Right.
That he had died in an accident. And at first, That's how it was ruled.
Okay.
So, and here's where it gets creepy because, okay, so he really did kill Benjamin Peitzel. But Benjamin Peitzel's wife still thought, I mean, she knew about the scam.
Right.
But she still thought her husband was alive. She thought they faked it, that it was some cadaver. So H.H. Holmes says, okay, well, I'm going to go identify the body, but I need a family member too. So he takes one of the daughters, one of Benjamin Peitzel's daughters, who I think was only 15 at the time.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're going to go to Philadelphia from Chicago and we're going to identify the body. Now, evidently, like, he identified the body, obviously, because he killed him.
Right.
The daughter, I think they only let her look at the teeth.
Right.
So I'm not sure if she knew that that was really her dad or not. Right. But she did say, yeah, that's my dad, because that's what she was supposed to say.
Right.
Now, at this point, for some reason, Holmes decided he's going to take three of the Peitzel children, and he takes them on this, like, odyssey, like, all like on trains, like, all over the fucking country.
Yeah, it got confusing for me. For some reason, he thought, to avoid suspicion, that he had to separate the children from the mother, but it's never really explained in any story I heard of why he thought that it was suspicious that the children were with the mother.
I don't know if he was just kind of got off on him telling her, because he kept telling, oh, we're going to go, you know, we're going to go meet up with Benjamin.
Right.
And then they would get to one city. Oh, he's not here. We must have just missed him. Now we have to go to this city.
Right.
So and he was keeping them separate. So he kept like three of the kids and then the wife and the baby, because they had one that was like only one or something like that. And he would like, sometimes they'd be in the same town, or even I think a couple times they were even on the same train
without knowing about each other.
Right, and the weird thing too is that in some of the cities, like his third wife, Georgiana Yoke, sometimes she would be in the city too and she had no fucking idea what was going on.
Yeah.
He was evidently
trying to keep everybody in this family pretty much separate in two different groups.
Yeah.
So he can manipulate them. They're all trying to write letters to one another, but he's intercepting letters.
And yeah. He didn't send any.
I think he was forging letters too, I think. I don't remember.
But it's just, like I said, his story is like so complex and it's like, why did he do all this shit? I don't know.
Right.
But the thing is, okay, what eventually ended up happening, even though they did get the payout from the insurance company, he obviously took most of the money. I think he only gave like $300 to the wife. But somebody started to be, somebody at the insurance company or somebody in around there started to become suspicious that maybe that wasn't an accident.
All right.
So the Pinkertons, the very famous detective agency, were hired to look into it. And they determined, yeah, he probably killed that dude. So then they start looking for him. And once they suspected that, and at this point, three of the Peitzel children, no one knew where they were.
Right.
So then they kind of started following his trail, backtracking, stuff like that. Now, he did get arrested at one point. Oh, and actually, this is how he ended up getting caught. He got arrested for insurance fraud. He got put in jail with another dude named Marion Hedgepeth, who was kind of a big like criminal at the time. Now, he told Marion Hedgepeth, let's do this insurance scam and I'll give you $500 if you tell me the name of a lawyer that will work all this out, like a crooked lawyer.
Right.
So Marion Hedgepeth did that after H.H. Holmes got out. And, you know, they did the scam and everything like that. He neglected to send $500 to Marion Hedgepeth.
Yes.
So when Marion Hedgepeth read about all this shit going on, he narked.
Yeah, ratted him out. Says, I got you, sucker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is essentially, so always pay your criminal, you know.
Don't stiff your partners.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't stiff your partners in crime.
Because that's what happens. Yeah. You end up getting caught. So that's kind of how the Pinkertons got onto him and everything like that, because I forgot to mention. So they chase him around and stuff like that. And this other investigator gets on, I think his name was Frank Geyer. And he starts retracing Holmes's circuitous journey, like around the country with these kids. Now, in a property that Holmes owned in Toronto, they found the bodies of the two little girls.
Yeah.
And also at another property he owned, I can't remember what city it was, they also found what were probably the remains of the little boy.
Yeah.
It looked like he had burned them, like in the stove, like tried to burn them up. There were like little bones and stuff like that. So for sure, Benjamin Peitzel, he killed.
Mm-hmm.
And for sure, he killed those three kids.
Right.
Those are the ones that are positive.
So he basically killed that woman's entire family.
Yeah. He didn't kill her.
Did the baby got away, though, I think.
Yeah, and he didn't kill the baby.
Yeah.
But, and actually, I think one other kid.
Okay.
Because I think she had two of the kids with her, the youngest one.
Here's the weirdest thing. If you really kind of look at the big picture of this case, Holmes spends most of his time riding around on trains.
Yeah, he's moving from city to city trying to escape things.
Doing lots of paperwork and trying to figure out all these scams. I mean, it's a lot of work. Okay, to avoid work.
How do you keep track of all that shit?
Yeah, he doesn't want to work as a doctor, so he wants to work as a con man. And it's almost like it would be easier just to work as a damn doctor, you would think.
That's what kills me.
I don't get it.
He had all these aliases. He had all these scams running at the same time. He had three wives. He had how do you keep track of all of that stuff? How do you keep track of all your aliases? I can barely remember my own name half the time. How do you keep track of like 10 other ones? And like there's all these lawsuits going on. All of a sudden, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
He's a crazy, crazy person.
Yeah. It's a lot of work to avoid work.
It is, yes. It's like, it's not worth it. But yeah, so okay, for sure he killed those four. Now, they think probably very, very likely he also killed five other people, which were either like all his mistresses, Minnie Williams and her sister Nanny Williams.
Yeah.
He probably killed both of them. Minnie Williams, I don't know if he actually legally was married to her. There's no legal marriage certificate on file, but... like there are with the other three. The three that he legally married, he didn't kill them. They're fine. But the ones that were just mistresses, because sometimes he would hire, you know, women to work in his, you know, work in his pharmacy or whatever.
So officially, how many did he kill?
Probably nine. Now, when he was finally arrested.
Yeah.
He actually confessed. He ended up confessing to 27.
Right.
However... some of those people were still alive.
Yeah, proof that the dude lied his ass off.
Right. Now, some of those people he did kill, like I said, there were five women.
Now, out of the nine that we pretty much know for sure, how many of those nine had a sexual motive?
I don't think any.
And none of them.
Like, I think...
the motive was always scamming.
Something like that. Or someone just got in his way. Because it seems like, okay, so Nanny and Minnie White, who I think were sisters... he killed them because they had a $40,000 property in Fort Worth, Texas, and he wanted it.
Right.
So I think he probably just killed them because of that. Right. Because, you know, so really, he could get the property. Some of the other mistresses, he might have killed them either because he got sick of them or their husbands got in the way or they got pregnant. Because some of them, he said that he had tried to give them an abortion and they died that way. I don't know how true that is. He did admit that in a couple of cases.
Yeah. He wanted mistresses and wives, but he didn't want children. Not anymore of them. Yeah. You're dealing with a guy who's not so much like a traditional modern serial killer then. What you're dealing with is somebody kind of like an 1800s serial poisoner. Where they were poisoning people to steal money.
Because he doesn't really seem to have gotten any particular, like a sexual satisfaction.
Right.
Like he didn't get off on killing people. Yeah. He just seemed to kill them because they were in the way. They were obstructing something he wanted to do.
Yeah, and he was a little bitty guy, so probably not really capable of a whole lot of physical violence. And there doesn't seem to be any torture involved.
Now, they said there was
a medieval rack.
I don't think that was really there. Okay. I think that was a later exaggeration.
That was added. Yeah.
Like I said, I think that he was a very practical killer.
Okay.
If he didn't have to kill you, he wouldn't.
All right.
But if he had to, he would, and he wasn't really particularly bothered about it.
And the whole murder castle thing, probably not true.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he did kill people in there. They did find some bones. Like, I think they found... they found one woman named Julia Smythe or Julia Connor. She's known as both things because one was her married name and one was her maiden name. And she had a daughter named Pearl. And both of them disappeared.
Right.
And they did find some bone fragments like in the basement of it. So they do think he might have killed a few people there, like I said, including some of his mistresses. Right. But they didn't find bodies.
Okay.
Now, some of the bodies, they think, like, I think Emmeline Segrand, who was another one of his mistresses that he probably killed, you know, he kind of said, oh, well, I sold her skeleton to a medical school. But there was, like, no way to check that back then. Maybe he didn't. Who knows? Right. He probably did kill her, though, because she did disappear.
So when I first found this case, I was a kid, and a friend of mine had these damn serial killer baseball cards. And you know, and he was on.
Yeah, I remember those.
Remember those things?
Yeah.
And on the back of it, it had a picture of that murder castle, and it said, you know, oh, he built this huge labyrinth, a three-story labyrinth that had racks and oiled chutes and secret passageways, and the basement had a huge pit filled with lye and blah 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 blah.
Right.
But that's not actually. That's a mischaracterization of that of that place.
Or at least an exaggeration.
Okay.
At least an exaggeration. All right. Like I said, I'm not saying he wasn't a killer. He was.
Right.
He probably...
It's just that it was not this purpose-built labyrinth where you could chase people through a maze and torture
I don't
them
think,
in there.
Yeah, he didn't build it specifically for that.
Okay.
Like some kind of like Torquemada kind of, you know, I'm going to build a fucking a torture chamber. He didn't build it for that.
No. The basically, newspapers came up with that idea as a good concept.
And then, like I said, in the 40s when they started writing like all these true crime, pulp fiction kind of books, they took that story and kind of ran with it.
So it wasn't a murder castle. He had a scam castle.
Yeah.
That murders would happen in every
now
and then.
That murders would happen in every now and then, if necessary.
Okay.
Now, after he was caught, like I said, he confessed to 27 altogether. Okay, like according to, if you go to Adam Seltzer's blog, which is mysterioushicago.com, and I would recommend it because it's fascinating. There's other stuff besides H.H. Holmes, but he's written a lot about H.H. Holmes on there too. His updated victims list, he has them separated into like certain, likely, maybe, and no. So he's got four in the definite, which is Benjamin Peitzel and the three Peitzel children.
All right.
Five in the very likely, which are the five mistresses. Then he's got 28 that are possibilities.
Okay.
And these are names that Holmes brought up in his confessions and stuff like that, that either did vanish around that time or, you know, their whereabouts were unknown. So it's possible he could have killed them.
Okay.
Now, he also came up with 22 victims that Holmes confessed to killing, but... we're not dead.
Right. So that kind of goes against his credibility. Once you start throwing it, that this guy is a confession machine.
My very favorite one of these, and Adam Seltzer mentioned it in one of his talks, was this woman named Kate Durkee. And she actually kind of did get scammed by him. Like it was some kind of insurance scam that he pulled off or whatever. And he claimed later that he had killed her.
Yeah.
And I love that she kind of marched into this like newspaper office or a post office or something like that. And she made the statement. She says, I have not been murdered either by H.H. Holmes or anyone else. I've never been murdered. She said, I've never been murdered by H.H. Holmes or anyone else, which I thought was very funny.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm right here, motherfucker.
Yeah.
But like some of the people that he claimed he had, you know, that he had killed, like I said, the guy that he went to medical school with that he claimed he killed and stuff like that were actually still alive and lived like a normal life.
So body count probably more like around 25-30.
I'm saying 9 for sure.
Yeah.
27 could be.
Right.
That's not crazy.
Right.
Because some of the people that were in the maybe thing, like I said, did kind of vanish around that time and
but
they don't know where they were.
But when you factor in his lies and things and the technology of the time, probably more like 20.
Yeah. Which is bad enough.
That's bad enough.
But like
but it's not 200.
No.
Right.
Yeah, there's no way.
Right.
He did not kill 20.
No.
And even, like I said, even on some of the documentaries, they'll kind of repeat the myth that like, oh, there are 50 people that came to Chicago for the World's Fair that were unaccounted for, or they're missing or something like that. That is also an exaggeration.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. When he first got arrested, he was kind of like, deny. But they were kind of like, well, and when he went on trial for killing Benjamin Peitzel, he fired his lawyers like the first day. I was like, I got this shit.
Yeah.
Like I said, very self-aggrandizing, very arrogant, very cocky. He acted as his own lawyer for, I think, about a day and a half until he started to lose.
Yeah. And then, like, maybe I should hand this
And then maybe I should hand this over to people that actually know what they're doing, but he still lost anyway. So he did get convicted for only the killing of Benjamin Peitzel, and he was sentenced to hang. Now, once he was sentenced to hang and he knew that he was going to die and, you know, they gave him an execution date, I guess he decided to make a total 180 and just say, yeah, I did fucking everything. Because, William Randolph Hearst.
Yeah, they offered him money.
Offered him a shit ton of money. Actually, about $200,000, $215,000 in today's money for a full confession.
Wow.
So he evidently wrote this big, huge, long confession.
Randolph Hearst got into it.
Yeah.
He wanted to know, I guess.
Yeah.
And maybe he was a serial killer junkie himself. Maybe he was a fan.
Well, serial killers sold papers.
Yeah.
Is basically what it boiled down to.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
So
I forgot.
Now there's also some controversy over whether what Holmes wrote in his thing, if that's what he actually wrote, or if the newspapers added some fun details.
Yeah.
So there's no way of knowing.
Right, because you don't have the original draft.
I mean, they do, but it's like, it could be, I don't know, it could be
They had the original draft in his handwriting?
Well, that I don't know. But yeah, and you know, so like I said, it's kind of one of those things where you can't really get to the bottom of the mystery. It's like a lot of the shit is gone, right, or you know, a lot of the shit was made up. But you know, say in this
that shit's probably in a private collection somewhere. Yeah.
But in this particular confession, he kind of, some of the stuff was maybe true. Like when he talked about killing the two Peitzel girls, he said, you know, I put them in a trunk. And then I, you know, drilled a hole in the top of the trunk and then put gas in the trunk. He probably did do that because they did,
how did he get him? How did he get him in the trunk? He trick him into the trunk?
Probably.
Or,
or he drugged him. Maybe he drugged him.
He didn't say,
Because he was kind of a big advocate of like drugging people. Like he was super into like drugging people with chloroform and all that kind of stuff. So like I said, he doesn't seem to have gotten any sort of charge out of it.
Right, in terms of torture.
Although I have to say that I think the two little girls, he found them buried like under this house.
Yeah.
They were nude. I don't think they found any clothes with them. So I don't know if he took the clothes off after they were dead just to like burn them.
I think that's what he claimed.
Yeah, I think he took the clothes off after. Like, so I don't know if he really got any sexual charge. They were just in the way. Right. And he thought, well, I'll just get rid of them.
Right.
He just didn't really seem to have, like, people seemed just like objects to him. Right. Like, you were just in the way
of me getting. He's a psychopath.
Yeah, you're just in the way of me getting this money. You know, he didn't really enjoy killing, I don't think. He would just do it if he had to.
He probably enjoyed the power of being like a godlike force who could select who would die and this and that, but not necessarily like the, you know, he wasn't getting into like the suffering or anything like that, or drawing out the death and torturing them. You know, he didn't seem to be doing that.
So he published this big long confession, which he lovingly recreated a bunch of his murders and stuff. But a lot of it was bullshit because some of the people were still alive. So they did actually hang him for the murder of Benjamin Peitzel. Like you said, when he was on the gallows with the noose around his neck, he's like, I take it all back, you know.
Yeah, I made it all up.
But then they were like, fuck, and they pulled the lever anyway. So
there was one case, I forgot who it was. They put the noose around his neck, and as they're getting ready to pull the switch, to have him fall down there and snap his neck, he goes, on his way down, he goes, I'm Jack the Ripper. Poof.
That was actually, we did a show about that. Was that Thomas Neal Cream or was that that other dude?
I forgot.
No, he didn't say, they thought he said, I am Jack the.
Yeah, that's right.
We did a show about that.
I'm Jack the.
But I think that's the only reason people think that he's Jack the Ripper. And that's actually a good segue because.
Yeah. No, he just wanted him to postpone the execution so he could.
Stop the rope. I want to get off. Yeah. But yeah. But yeah, funny you mentioned Jack the Ripper.
We're laughing at dudes grasping for straws at the end of their life.
Because
those were shitbags, though. Those were shitbags. Those were all serial killers.
Yeah, it's not like it was an innocent
person. It's not like it's a real person.
Yeah. Well, it's not like it was an innocent person. Yeah. You're like, oh, man, that sucks. These are pieces of shit.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, funny you should mention Jack the Ripper because one of the latest things, and it might have only been the book that came out this year or last year, Jeff Mudgett, who is actually the great-grandson of H.H. Holmes, because, you know, Herman Mudgett was his real name, he has come out as stating that he thinks that H.H. Holmes and Jack the Ripper were the same person.
No, unlikely.
Yeah. Now, I should note, I think, like I said, I haven't read his book. It seems to me that the only reason that he thinks that is, one, because some of the police sketches of Jack the Ripper that were made at the time, because witnesses looked like...
The M.O. was totally different.
Right, looked like... Also, he said, their handwriting was the same. But, okay, I should say this, though.
Yeah.
One, there were a lot of dudes with those big-ass mustaches and those kind of hats and stuff. That was just the style back then, so a lot of dudes looked like that. Two, the From Hell letters from Jack the Ripper, they don't know if that's actually the killer or not. I mean, that one was probably from because it had the kidney and stuff.
If that was a human kidney.
If that was a human kidney, they had no way of knowing that back then.
Could have got that from the butcher shop.
Right.
Might have been a beef or a lamb.
I don't think there's enough. And here's the thing. And Jeff Mudgett, too, he says, there's all this time, like when the Jack the Ripper murders were happening in 1888, that H.H. Holmes' movements in the U.S. were unaccounted for. And he said that he was in London around that time. But here's the problem. Now, according to Adam Seltzer, who's the guy that wrote the most recent book, he has found some papers from that time when the Jack the Ripper killings were going on. He's like, I found a voter registration in Chicago where H.H. Holmes registered to vote. Now, he's like, now... I should say that
he cared about democracy.
Yeah, I guess. That his signature was not on it. It was just like a clerk's signature. Yeah. He's like, so yeah, technically he didn't have to sign. Yeah. But he's like, why would somebody be registering him to vote if he wasn't there?
He registered. It had something to do with proving that he lived there so he could do some kind of scam later.
Yeah, like that's what I mean. So he found some other papers from that time that showed that Holmes was probably in the city doing business at that time when the murders were going on. And like I said, also, totally different modus operandi.
Totally different.
Jack the Ripper picked off random women and got off on cutting them up.
Yeah, and they were hags.
They were, old, diseased prostitutes.
Right.
And he would just pick them at random off the street if it was easy.
Women like that would have been far beneath H.H. Holmes. H.H. Holmes, these women and his the women that he married and the women that he dated, you know, as what do you call it, mistresses?
Yeah.
They were evidently all good-looking young women.
And the ones that have pictures of them were pretty young women.
He, cream of the crop.
Yeah.
He was a desired guy.
Oh, yeah. He had no problem getting women, like I said. Right. And a lot of women that came to work for him, even if they were married, he would seduce them.
Yeah.
So, so he was evidently very charming.
He was a player.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But like I said, he did not pick random people. No. He did not seem to get any satisfaction from killing people. He would pick people. He would kill people that had something that he wanted.
Yeah.
And the person being alive was in his way of getting what he wanted. That's it. It was a completely practical motive.
Yeah.
He did not take any of their guts as trophies or anything like Jack the Ripper. It was totally, totally different. So
he's almost kind of more like a vampire.
Yeah.
You know, got rid of you to just take your shit.
To just take your shit.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all he did. And like I said,
he walked around like he was a nobleman.
Yeah. Really just a con man who would kill if he had to.
Right.
I really don't think, and I know it sells books like to say this person was Jack the Ripper, that person was Jack the Ripper. You know, look how fucking Patricia Cornwell, she sold 50 squintillion books saying that the artist Walter Sickert was Jack the Ripper, which probably he wasn't. I think the only evidence she had was, he did some paintings that looked like Jack the Ripper's crime scenes. I'm like, it was a fascinating case. It was like all over the papers. It's like, why wouldn't an artist be inspired by that? I mean, that seems really dumb. It's like, that's kind of like saying just because I write horror stories that I really do that shit and go and write about it. That's retarded. So anyway.
We could probably wrap this up. I think
we probably could. Okay. So like I said, the case of H.H. Holmes is so vast and there's so much research on it, stuff like that. And I'm sure I got a lot of shit wrong.
Yeah. You're going to have serial killer fanboys jumping out. But you didn't read this. You didn't read that. Because they all do that.
I'm telling you right now which ones I read. I read Devil in the White City, which is partly fictionalized. And Eric Larson has said that. Now they're actually making a movie out of that. And it's probably
and the purpose of this show is to introduce the cases to our audience. Let them research it. This is not source material.
And like I said, I also read Depraved by Harold Schechter, the very famous book about him.
Right.
And we watched several documentaries about it. I watched the one on Netflix. There was one on the Biography Channel, I think. I watched that one. And I read most of Adam Seltzer's posts on his blog
It's an interesting case. Even back in the day when I heard it, though, it just smelled fishy. And what you found actually kind of confirmed some of my suspicions.
That, I mean, like I said,
the case wasn't as extravagant as...
Sucked as a person, but was he like a modern Bluebeard who built this building specifically for the purpose of... No, I don't think so. He built it for other reasons and killed some people in there and whatever. But I don't think he built it exactly for that. He was just a scammer.
Yeah.
That's what he was.
Yeah, sounds right.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
So that'll do it for this episode since we've already gone a little bit over.
It's okay.
And so if you like these true crime episodes, then be sure to check out my new book, The Faceless Villain, if you haven't already. It's out in print and ebook, and we'll be out in audiobook eventually when I get time to work on it. And also, if you would like to support the show, then go to our Patreon at patreon.com/13oclockpodcast and do a monthly donation. Or if you would like to just do a one-time donation, then you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com, and there's a little link on the sidebar. And also check out our latest movie review, which was The Road Warrior, and also kind of Fury Road, because, we always get excited when we're talking about Mad Max stuff, and we have to kind of talk about Fury Road. So it was kind of a twofer review, like all in one. So check that out if you haven't yet. And that'll do it for this episode 64. See you next Tuesday. Bye.